You are now listening to FMB Radio.
Welcome to FMB Radio. Sorry, it's kind of, did I scare you? Is that coming in hot? Is that too much? You guys okay? Is everybody okay? I'm really amped up. I ate a lot of ice cream. I've had a late night coffee. I have good news and I have great news. Which one do you want first? Do you want the good news or do you want the great news? Oh, what's that? I can't hear you because this isn't a live podcast. Okay, I'll give you the good news first. The good news is FMB Radio got its first ever national press. Is that not what you guys are expecting? Were you thinking there's going to be something better than that? Because it's not. But for me, it's like this huge thing, right? Cherry Bomb magazine, which I idolize, put out a Cherry Bomb 100, and it's just 100 amazing women doing cool shit in food. You should check out the list. You can find it on their website. And somehow I slipped through the cracks and my stupid picture is in there with a little thing talking about what I do, which is FMB Radio. And it's one of those surreal feelings where I was like looking at the list, like, okay, like there's Christina Tosi, there's Cynthia Wong, there's fucking Ashley Christensen, there's just amazing women, like people that I straight up like fangirl, and they're on the list. So that was a super surreal thing to happen right off the bat. A huge congratulations to every single woman on that list. There were so many on there that I was like, I haven't been such a fan. So many food writers, so many chefs. Mashama Bailey was on there. Just like incredibly humbling. And a massive thank you to Cherry Bomb for paying attention to what people are doing, big and small. Thanks to you guys for listening. So that there's a show to even put out. It's just been a really special week. I had one of the best lunches that I've ever had at Le Farfalle. If you live in Charleston and you're not going there anytime, like lunch, brunch, dinner, it doesn't matter. But if you've never been, what are you doing? What are you waiting on? I don't know. Like I don't get to go out to lunch that often because it's not really a thing that people with small kids get to do. But I went in there to meet with Caitlin, the owner, and it was just supposed to be like a quick coffee. And I'm like, you know, I waddle in there because that's how I walk now. I waddle around like the penguin in Batman from the 90s, Danny DeVito. That's what I look like. And Michael, he's like, oh, you're hungry? I was like, oh, you know what? I could have a little bite of something. They have an amazing lunch menu. And I'm like, oh, I'll have a bite of something. I proceed to order, you know, muffuletta, of course. Best sandwich ever. I don't know of a better muffuletta in the city, if there's even another one in the city. But if there was, it wouldn't be as good as this one. I order that. Caitlin and I are like splitting a little wedding soup. Also killer. Italian wedding soup. Is there anything better than that? I don't know if there is. It's got all the right moves. It's brothy. It's savory. There's fucking meatballs in it. Pasta. Italian wedding soup has everything. Okay? It's got it all. It's the total package. And so I'm just like eating this beautiful lunch. It's already perfect. I've got great company. I'm hanging out with my friend. That and the breeze. In this gorgeous, airy restaurant that is Le Farfalle in the middle of a day. Sun's kind of streaming in through the windows. I'm just trying to paint you the picture because I want you guys to really feel what I felt. And here comes Michael with a bowl of pasta, which is not out of the ordinary. It's an Italian place, right? He's got a bowl of pasta in his hands. He sets it down. It's cacio e pepe. One of the most quintessential, perfect, really benchmark of a place that does hand-cut pasta or handmade pasta. But on top is white truffles. white Alba truffles shaved perfectly. They're like, they look like they floated down from heaven onto my pasta, and they're just like draping the pasta, melting ever so gently into that butter, cracked black pepper and cheese. And I thought I was going to cry. I think I did cry, which is embarrassing, but I was pregnant. So I was like, fuck it. It was the most perfect pasta. And then as I'm eating, I'm like, oh my God. Oh, sorry, Caitlin. Do you want a bite? And she's like, I don't know. I don't eat truffles. I don't eat that shit. Which I think is like strangely irreverent and amazing that the owner of this Italian restaurant that's, you know, one of the most elegant restaurants in all of Charleston, serving these beautiful seasonal white truffles that are like considered a delicacy and like one of the most sought after ingredients that people who think they're fancy go for. And she doesn't eat them. So I'm like, oh my God, wait. So you're telling me that I have this whole bowl to myself. I don't even have to share. And then I almost cried again because I ate the whole bowl I just got in there with it. Just slowly. Just dragging it around in the sauce that was like kind of clinging perfectly to the pasta, a little bit in the bowl. And I realized I had never had a bowl of truffles to myself. In the restaurant industry, I can't even count. I probably can't count the amount of times I have stood by or shaved truffles myself or, you know, assisted in the chef shaving truffles or assisted a maitre d' in shaving truffles or been a truffle follow where I have the truffle box on a silver tray and I'm carrying it out there. I'm around truffles constantly. Every single season we go through this where I'm like, oh yeah. So it's kind of like old hat in terms of I work with them a lot, but I don't eat them. And it was just such an unexpected thing. Michael and Caitlin are so elegant. They have this way of putting you at ease, giving you fancy things like fucking white Alba truffles in the middle of a Tuesday just because you're pregnant and they know that your life sucks. My life doesn't suck. My life doesn't suck. It's just that, you know, being pregnant is hard. And I don't know. It was a revolutionary experience. I think if it's within your means, you should go and you should sit and have a lunch where you just eat a bowl of truffles to yourself. It's pretty cathartic. I know that's not available to everyone. Maybe I'll start a charity where it's like, this is what I want you to be. This is what I want for you. I want you to come in and feel that loved and that fancy. Because every now and then, no matter how many times you've seen truffles go out in the season, you just got to shove a whole bowl in your face. It was great. But I digress. The show is great because today, Sarah Licklider is here. We're going to bring her on. She's the co-owner of Lioko Winery. She's a fucking rock star. And her husband, Matt, own Lioko. One of the, like, I don't know, leaders of the new California winemaking style. They've been at it for a while. They've got some incredible wines. They even brought us some. Eat your heart out, guys. I've got the 2014 Chardonnay from Anderson Valley right here. She's the coolest, and I can't wait to hear from her. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the one and only Sarah Licklider. Sarah Licklider. Did I say it exactly right?
You said it exactly right. Yes.
Listen to that voice. We were just talking behind the scenes. Apparently, she's a former vocalist. She's now the partner of Lioko. It's you and Matt Licklider, which I didn't realize you two totally took over the project. When did that happen exactly?
About a year and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's 100% La Familia now.
Where was the winery originally, and is it still there?
Yeah, so we custom crush. We don't own vineyards or an estate. So we custom crush at Punchdown Cellars in Santa Rosa.
Cool.
And it's still there. Came very close to losing it in the fires last year, but we were very fortunate. And it's basically a light industrial park, so there's a lot of cement, which kind of saved us.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That was so scary to watch and to be feel so helpless, especially this far away where we were just like sending money. And I think at that time I was still working at Fig, and we put a bunch of California Wines by the Glass and sent proceeds to there to try to help with the devastation. That must have been so terrifying.
It was.
Because not only like, amazing that they were able to save, you know, where you guys crush and where you guys make wine, but it's like, what if there are no grapes to buy?
Right. I know. Last year was a hellacious harvest. You know, we started with the heat storm and on Labor Day weekend, we had temperatures of like 115 degrees.
Oh my God.
And so, and then from there we went into the fires in October. So honestly, since then, like, you know, this last week we had a little rain. It was like,
this feels so easy.
No big deal.
compared to how shitty everything was last year. Yeah. This feels way
last
easier.
Last year set the bar for shitty.
Well, I'm so glad that you were unharmed and the facilities were unharmed. How did the farmers fare? Has it been like some were really, really devastated and some that you work with were totally fine? Or was everyone affected?
None of our farmers were affected.
Oh my
it was
God.
Amazing. We were incredibly lucky, both personally and professionally. We live in Healdsburg, and all of the surrounding towns were burning, but Healdsburg was not, so our home was fine. And also, none of the vineyards we work with had any damage.
Wow.
And our winery is still standing. So we were very, very blessed. Yes.
So blessed. And actually, we've met a few times at Fig when you've come in with Matt, and the last time that I waited on you, it must have been a long, like several years ago, because you guys were getting ready to move to Healdsburg. I think you were living in
San Francisco
at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so how has the move into Healdsburg treated you?
I was really the driver of moving out of San Francisco.
You were like, let's get the fuck out of here.
We lived in a 3-story walk-up in the wine business, just carrying cases up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And I was, and then, you know, then you got to do laundry. It's 3 floors down.
Dude.
$2 a wash, $1.50 to dry. While you're doing that, your car's getting towed or broken into.
Or
I was like, I can't deal. I really wanted to move up there. And it's been amazing. It's an incredible community of like-minded people in the wine business.
Yeah.
You know, most of our friends are our age with other labels.
So rad.
We all just go to dinner at each other's houses and there's a lot of camaraderie, and it's also stunningly beautiful.
It's freakishly beautiful. Healdsburg is like, but you know, it still has a feeling of realness, which is what I love about that place. It's like polished and chic and gorgeous, but it's also very much like you're still in the countryside and you can feel that. Whereas like when I was telling you a little bit before, but I lived in Napa and I was like, I love Napa and I think it's a wonderful place, and where I was working was really amazing, but it's so perfect that it almost creeped me out a little bit. Like I was like,
it's very well manicured.
It's so well manicured. Whereas I would always find myself just feeling really comfortable in Sonoma County in general, but like specifically, you know, Healdsburg is a treat.
Yeah. Sonoma is a little more rugged, a little more rustic in all the right ways.
Yeah. So that's been a cool move for you guys. And you just opened the tasting room. I've been following along closely with that because it looks so rad. Tell us a little about it.
We just opened on Labor Day weekend.
Congrats.
So right in time for harvest. Just to create a little extra hustle.
For punishment,
it's basically right on the square, on the corner of Center and Matheson. Super awesome location.
Wow.
And we spent 8 months doing construction, so it's beautiful and it's ready for action. We've had a really successful first month, and we bought a house last year 1 mile away. So
that's genius.
We can kind of just roll down the hill in the morning.
And is it you and Matt in the tasting room most of the time for now, or how's it going?
We are there quite often right now, and will be there almost every day for the next few months.
Wow.
Kind of slowly introducing more staff members, but we definitely want to be there to see people and interact and show people the face of the brand. And then, eventually we'll not be there every day and pass the baton to some very good soldiers.
Well, yeah, you have to kind of create that culture, especially in a community like Healdsburg.
We are. We're happy to be there and feel really grateful for our community and to have had this opportunity to get brick and mortar is just amazing after all these years.
Yeah, of being the quote-unquote urban winemakers.
Yeah, because you have to get really creative about how to convene with your customers.
Which, how have you guys been doing that? Mostly through online and then, like, how does that work when you're when you don't have a permanent home?
You know, in a car, in a box, with a mouse.
In a house.
Yeah, any way we can. Sam, I am. We do events all over the country.
Yeah.
We go to festivals. We'll do an event in your home. We have people in our home. You know, we rent out an event space. We hold a happy hour at a restaurant. It's just been really dynamic and interesting and fun, but also, you know, constantly trying to hustle and create that experience anywhere and any way that we can. So it's nice to kind of have a place to call home.
Yeah.
And to have a place that people can associate you with, you know, that memory.
Yeah.
So we're really excited.
Well, it was one of the things, like, I've worked in restaurants for so long, and you get to know the wines through getting to know the people who represent the wine, and not always do you get to come in contact with the maker. You know, a lot of times,
right.
Especially when I was in New York, you know, you don't get to see the winemakers at that time. It was like 2011. They weren't really traveling as much. They're very busy farming, obviously. Somehow you snuck out of there, like, right in the middle of harvest, which is fun. But it's like, when I started working in Charleston, I was amazed at how many of the California winemakers were really just, like, basically on tour. They're kind of getting out there and actually being in people's restaurants, like coming to places like Fig, which, you know, I think from our side, we always think of you guys as, like, these really, like, amazing people who couldn't possibly have time, and you don't have time to come and do it. But it's so exciting when you see Matt walk into the restaurant, you see you walk into the restaurant and actually pour the wines and talk about them. It makes selling those wines tremendously easy and something that we can all really get behind. But I know that that's not an easy task in trying to be a farmer, or in your case, you know, winemaker who's
right,
hustling
producer.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's both. It's kind of a double-edged sword. On one hand, we love traveling. I mean, Charleston's one of my, and I know one of Matt's favorite places to come.
It's pretty good.
You know, The Ordinary is my favorite restaurant in the country.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And your wines play so beautifully with the food that is served
thank
there.
You.
So that's always fun.
You know, and so it's great and it's dynamic and exciting. On the other hand, when you're traveling, you know, 2 to 3 weeks out of the month, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And it's like, I need to be at home, you know, just to recover.
And then when you are home, it's like, you don't really get that full break. It's not like when you're like, oh, great, I'll get home and just, like, put my feet up and watch Netflix.
No.
Like, you're back in.
Matt and I were laughing. This year, we spent our anniversary dinner with two couples we had never met before who had won an auction lot and were in town.
That's
and part
amazing.
Of the auction lot was to have dinner with us. And so I was like, well, happy Honey, anniversary.
I love you so much. This is what we're doing.
This is how we do it.
And I love that it's a husband and wife thing, because that is an interesting dynamic too. You know, working with your partner in any capacity is challenging, but how do you guys balance that?
Wow. Great question. It is extremely challenging and also very rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is not for everyone. It's a very difficult path.
Mm-hmm.
I know for us, it, you know, kind of rocked the foundation there for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our marriage is very much based on the ways that we are alike. And I think when we started working together, the ways that we're different kind of came out right away.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh? But we really, you know, now we're on kind of solid ground and we really balance each other out. We both have different strengths. We both have different ideas. You know, we both bring different things to the party. And there's certain things that we manage separately, too.
And I think that's kind of one of the things that I've seen work the best, is, like, kind of divide and conquer, but still have the same vision instead
exactly.
of being... Because how do you know, not go home and constantly talk about work?
That there's some rules that we set around that.
Amazing. Yeah.
We don't always stick to them, but we both have the right to say, no work talk tonight, just kind of throw up the white flag.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to really set boundaries and make time for your personal life. make it so that you have a personal life.
yeah, that's the feat.
Yeah.
That's so, a feat in itself, much less like balancing it together.
But it is great to work towards as a common goal. And I mean, not to say that it doesn't get really tricky sometimes. It kind of speeds up the years. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. I feel like we've been married for 20 years.
How long have you been married?
Not that long. Only 3 years.
3 years. Yeah but you're right. And that's, I have that joke about restaurants. I'm like, working in restaurants is like, if you stay at a restaurant 5 years, it's kind of like working there 25
yeah,
years.
Yeah, it's a long tenure.
Yeah, dog year.
Yeah, I know.
And what did you do before you met Matt?
Funny you should mention that was restaurant tenure positions. I worked in restaurants for 20 years.
Wow.
Age 16, I started as a hostess. And then at age 36, I was a GM and a wine buyer. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So that's incredible. Why if I look a little tired.
No, I'm right there with you. You look younger than I do.
No. So yeah, and then there I was kind of doing the math on my salary, and I realized that the dishwasher was making more than I was.
Oh no.
I'm like, wait a minute, I work 80 hours a week.
How the fuck did that happen?
Yeah. And so, you know, also it's hard to sustain that lifestyle into your 40s.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to make a change here. I can't keep going to bed at 3 after copious amounts of tequila. So now I go to bed at 10 after copious amounts of tequila. So I started selling wine, and I started working for distributors and importers, and that's how I met Matt.
Wow.
The distributor I was working for in California was selling Lioko.
And so, what year is this?
This was 2012.
2012.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, and Lioko was kind of, they had been
around. They were
around,
like halfway
were
around like, the sun. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and so, yeah, Matt got in my car one day and I was kind of dreading it just because I was like, oh, here we go again. Another, another day driving some probably egomaniac around. But it wasn't an egomaniac. It was Matt.
Who's the best?
And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Wow. So we just kind of drove off into the sunset. And then when Matt and I got married, I was still working for an importer. I was the Western States manager for David Shivrick, who's based in LA.
Oh yeah.
And you know, we were both just constantly going in different directions, and Matt really needed the help, and I was qualified, and we decided just to join forces.
Yeah.
So I am now a proprietor by marriage.
Amazing.
And the general manager of our company. So
incredible.
Yeah.
Well, you're groomed for the job. I mean, a lifetime of working in restaurants and then into distributing, like that's one of the things that I see people when they're ready to like kind of get out of the actual like night shift of restaurants. They're like, I've learned so much about wine along the way. Like it's a nice transition. It's a nice step up. But now to see it from the production side is like probably next level, I would imagine.
It is.
Like all of a sudden you see you're thinking of an entirely different matrix, if you will.
Totally. And it's a learning curve every day. I mean, as you know, the world of wine, it's just, you could study every aspect of it for the rest of your life and still know nothing.
I know.
It's so humbling that way.
It is incredibly humbling. And yes. I've never understood that. I'm like, I feel like I should be better at this.
I know.
But it's like, I always know a list or I know a producer. I will never fully understand wine.
I know. Me neither. I just God,
can't.
But thank God we have that to look forward to. We can keep learning.
That's right.
And so, yeah, it's been fun to be way closer to the production side of it, just to be on the supplier side of it.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting. And to just keep learning every single day is really fun.
What is the main, like, sort of challenge that you faced when you went from being a GM of a restaurant to being the GM of your own company?
Wow. Learning the job.
That's a good one.
First of all. Kind of putting a lot of infrastructure in place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the different metrics, you know, just kind of how like margin and different lots and different markets, you know,
yeah.
We sell to 40 different states.
Wow.
And offshore, you know.
Amazing.
So it's just a lot of moving parts,
mm-hmm.
learning all the, I mean, we work with 20 different vineyards
that
span 250 miles.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know.
It was nothing like restaurants. It was just like your moving parts for
correct.
Sure sounds the same,
right.
But like it's a whole new set of challenges and right. things that are
basically I had a great palate and management skills.
Yeah.
And knew a lot about wine.
But I think that is something that is amazing about restaurants. It kind of prepares you. You're such a dynamic person anyway that it's mm-hmm. like, just show me, like, teach me the vernacular and show me, you know, you already know so much about wine.
Yeah, I was like, I went to college. I got this.
You can do it. And we were talking a little bit about that too. You were in a former life a musician as well. Where did you went to college in New Mexico?
I did. I went to the College of Santa Fe, which I think is no longer.
RIP.
RIP. By the way, still paying off my student loans.
But can I'm those like, die?
Is my degree still valid? Not sure. So there's that.
My debt is, though. Thanks a lot.
That's the wine. The wine business is just, we're all just like misfits.
It really is. Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went, lived in Santa Fe for 8 years and studied music. And it's my favorite. New Mexico is my favorite state, as I was telling you. It's so beautiful and cool.
I've heard there's like a very much a cult following for people who have lived in New Mexico. I found this out and I haven't ever set foot in the state, so I can't say why. But I see it and I'm like, it looks pretty cool. But there's something more like on a visceral, like magical level.
Ugh, you got to get there. Yeah, well, the land of enchantment. It's no joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's their tagline.
Mm-hmm. It's very magical.
It's so beautiful. It's just very ecologically diverse. There's, you know, there's mountains, there's desert, there's forest, there's rivers.
Wow.
It's just so beautiful. And then, you know, the art, it's Georgia O'Keeffe country.
Totally.
It's just, there's cowboys, there's Native Americans, there's a high spirituality vibe there. It's very soulful. It's just, there's so much talent. There's a lot of musicians, a lot of writers. It's just a place where really kind of cool people meet.
It seems like an artistic haven for people who are like just creatives in general, which I feel like California is its own brand of flavor, specifically Northern California. Mm-hmm. So how did you transition into California if you loved New Mexico so much?
Well, I actually grew up in Connecticut, and I just kept making my way west.
Go west, young Sarah.
Yeah, I had a long stint in the Southwest. After Santa Fe, I moved to Austin to pursue my music career.
Yeah.
And I was there for 3 years, and then I moved to San Diego as for a family commitment. My sister was there and had settled there, and my poor mother, who's in Cape Cod, and had traveled all over this damn country to see both me and my sister all through our 20s and 30s.
She was like, could you just live in one place, please?
Oh, my God. She just really showed a lot of heart.
Aww.
I know. And so my sister was settling in San Diego, and she was going to have a baby. And I said, I'll tell you what, Mom. Because she was like, it's easier for me to go to Europe than come see you girls. I said, I'll move to San Diego. And then when you fly coast to coast, you can get off the plane. You can see both your daughters and your granddaughter all in one shot.
Oh, my God. That's so sweet.
So I moved there. And I ended up staying there longer than I anticipated. It was like 6 years. But it's a tough wine community in San Diego, especially when I was there. It's very much a beer kind of surfer community.
Yeah.
It's becoming much more than that now. You know, my sister runs a museum there, and she and her husband are very much into art and architecture, and they have a very intellectual, you know, art-driven community that they're part of. But in the wine world, it was a little rough and tumble.
Especially maybe then, because things have changed so much, like even in the past 5 years, I think in general for the wine scene.
Yeah.
So it's like
totally.
That when this was probably how long ago?
Yeah, it was like 2006 to 2012.
So it was different everywhere, but especially mm-hmm. like those kind of places.
Yeah.
I feel like it took a while for things to kind of change and for people to change their
did.
Just their the approachability of wine, I think, has changed so much recently mm-hmm. due to people like you guys that are out there sort of like spreading that gospel, if you will. People like Pax Molle that I think are amazing that are out there just kind of being like, wine doesn't have to be this intimidating, scary thing that you don't know enough about, because that's how everyone feels. I mean, even you and I feel like that.
Right.
Especially
they think of Bordeaux and Burgundy and it's so really serious.
I can't afford it. I don't understand it. I'm going to do the wrong thing. And I think that's what's so fun about these wines. I always take the Carignan. I'll buy like, I don't know, whatever I can find, like 6 bottles that I'll take to Thanksgiving, because A, it's a perfect pairing, I think, for what we've
wine.
Got. Yeah, turkey wine for sure. And the wines are just so
fresh and approachable and drinkable right now, but you can also, like, you know, this bottle that you brought here, this 2016 Pinot Noir, the single appellation.
Severia Vineyard?
Yeah.
It's from Santa Cruz Mountains AVA.
This one's fancy.
It is.
They get way more elegant. Like, you kind of run the gamut of, like, this is, like, we've got this beautiful, luxe, elegant, luxurious wine if you want it. We also have this, like, you can just take a bottle of this and
sativa.
And have fun with it. Yeah, it's called
exactly.
Sativa. It's like,
yeah, I think you kind of hit the hammer right on the head there. Or I guess that's the nail on the head.
The hammer? With the hammer. Yeah, we can hit something with a hammer.
We hammered something out.
We smashed it with a hammer.
Yeah, you know, people are so intimidated by wine, but the reason why people love wine and gravitate toward it and that we all come to the wine business is because wine is a conversation piece.
Yeah.
It's something that you have with dinner. It's something that accompanies your conversation with loved ones and friends and great nights that last forever. And it's complex and it's amazing and it's living and breathing and it changes over the years and over an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, as we were saying, you can keep diving into it deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and still never come up because there's so much depth, you know, and you can keep exploring, and that's what makes it so mystical and exciting. And it doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be an old Bordeaux, you know, it can be a $22 bottle of Carignan or, you know, Sonoma County Chardonnay. And it can still bring all of those things.
And that's what I think is so cool. Like, it's become sort of a tradition for us to take the Carignan to Thanksgiving. And A, it was just fun to talk about. My boyfriend, who's not in the industry and, like, doesn't really care. He does now, but he doesn't care that much about wine. And when we first met, he loved the story. He loved the name. He was like, it's sativa. It's named after maybe a strain of weed. We don't really know what.
It is. In fact, I will confirm.
Okay. I was wondering because I've read mixed reviews where people are like, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. And I'm like, what else could it be?
Oh, that's funny.
It's sativa.
Yes, it is. Indica and sativa are named after those strains of cannabis. Yeah.
Which I think is, I always, when I'm selling this one, I'm like, this is such a playful, like, beautiful way to drink a really, it's better than you expect that it would even be. It always blows my mind. And the vintage to vintage variation changes so much that it's like, it's in a whole new world every time that we open it on Thanksgiving. So it's so fun.
Well, the vintage is the vintage is the vintage.
Yeah. And what do you think it's going to be like this year?
I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. We've been on quite a run with the even numbered years. So 2014 was fantastic. 2016 trumped that. They're the best wines we've ever made.
Wow.
And now 2018 is shaping up to be absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, we're really excited. Especially after last year, Harvest was such a shit show.
Oh my God.
and we fared pretty well in 2017. We actually made some really good wines. But, you know, 2018, it was a nice, cool, even year, you know. Harvest was really late. Everything got extra long hang time and the flavors developed slowly. We had a good amount of rain. I'd say maybe 60% of what would constitute a normal year.
Yeah.
You know, post drought, but most of it came in the month of March and it was enough to make the vines happy. And yeah, it was a great year and we've had a nice, easy harvest.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love the variation because even if you have like a quote unquote, you know, not great year, it's still such a time capsule of what happened that year. It's this really beautiful picture. And it's like, it's not even that it's not good or classically good. And that's what I love about these new California wines is that it's not focused on being perfect. It's more focused on being what it is and where it comes from and kind of a sense of place. And the wines always show that really, really well. And Charleston loves these wines, by the way. They're in the best restaurants here. And I hadn't really seen them in the market. I guess it had been kind of early for us on the East Coast to have them. But until I moved here in about, I guess that was 2012, 2013,
okay.
I started seeing them. And now it's like, man, when the new vintage of Leoco comes in, it's always so, so exciting because you're like, what are they going to taste like?
Well, we, as much as Charleston loves us, we love Charleston. And I have to hand it to Matt, my husband. He's been working in this town for a long time, and he's really cultivated a great following and a lot of great friends.
Yeah, he's an OG here.
Yeah, he is. So we're so happy to be here and to be represented in those restaurants. I mean, this is actually, Charleston is our third biggest wholesale market after California and New York.
Wow.
So it's a really important market to us and also one that's very close to our hearts.
Oh man, it's so cool to having the studio because I've always been a fan of that style of wine. And I think when you can get a Pinot Noir from California that has that beautiful, acidic, restrained kind of perfectly balanced where it's not so over extracted and huge like some of the things that, you know, even that I was tasting at Napa in 2011, yeah. Where they've come a long way, obviously, too. I mean, they were some of the first to do that. But the wines are so unique and now in such a trendsetter. I think so many people look to you guys to be like, what is the new standard?
Well, thank you. I think that's been, you know, a lot of people are making wine in that style now, and it's a movement, you know, new California wine, which I'm so thankful for. But
yeah.
I will tell you, in 2005, when Matt launched this brand, that was not the case. It was very it was very avant-garde.
I'm sure it was met with a lot of, like, this is
resistance.
Not good.
Yeah. Yes.
This is not a good example.
So, you know, I'm really proud of Matt for that. Like, he and Kevin, our original co-founder, they were really out in front of it.
Yeah,
And started that trend along with a few of the other OGs, you
for
know,
sure.
And like Literai and Hirsch. But now a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon. But he, you know, Matt really fought the good fight for many years.
And it's such a testament to how that can actually change can come about that way just by sticking true to your vision, you know,
right.
To not being like, oh, somebody said, like the majority of people that I put this in front of were like, that's not good California Chardonnay.
Right. Or even like Carignan, you were saying how much you love the sativa. I mean, Leoka was making Carignan in 06.
Yeah, which there's still not much Carignan. I mean, there is comparatively, but it's like, you would be surprised. It's like a lot of people have never even heard of that grape when I'm like, oh, Carignan. And they're like, what's that?
Right.
It's so weird to me because, you know, we live in kind of a bubble where we're like, of course they've got Carignan. But
yeah, I think our goal has been exactly as you said, to show restraint, transparency, typicity, and it doesn't have to be for $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, our entry level Chardonnay, the Sonoma County Chardonnay, is $22.
That's an incredible, incredible price point.
And then, you know, our wines go up to $65. So, you know, you can drink amazing wines and not have to break the bank.
Yeah.
And they can still be complex and expressive, but also playful and light and bright and fun.
And they can be named after strains of wheat. Is there, this is another rumor I heard, is there really wine being made with THC in it in California? That's
100%. We are not doing
that. Is
it
on the market? Can you buy it? Where is this stuff?
I don't think you can buy it, but it shows up at a lot of parties. And it shows up in the cellar at Harvest.
I'm so curious about these wines.
Yes. So that is one thing I want to clarify. In our Indica Rosé and in our Sativa Carignan,
there is no THC. You heard it here first, guys. The official word. You will not be failing any drug tests as a result of drinking this one.
Yes, people do that. I don't partake personally because I'll just guzzle wine like it's water, and then I'll probably be fucked up for 2 weeks.
it's the same, and back in the day, I love to really, you know, California weed is definitely better than the stuff we get here. And I think the way they use marijuana in California is different than how people on the East Coast use marijuana. It's more of like, it's not that big of a deal to just indulge in that in the daytime. But like, it makes me freak out now. In my old age, I'm like, I can't. So, but I'm always curious. I'm like, could I drink the one with the THC in it?
Help. I just feel like you'd have to sip it so slowly to monitor what was going on that it would be an all-night project.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm really, really like calculating how I feel versus how many glasses I've had. And
I'm on my third sip. It's my third hour.
Is it kicking in? I don't know. It's really, really funny because I've definitely heard, like, you know, rumors about that there are winemakers that are doing that and that are maybe going to even get it to market at some point. I'm sure it will, especially in California.
Headed in that direction, probably under the guise of it being medicinal.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just my medicine, guys. This is mommy's medicine. It's prescribed to me. it's just really funny to me because I'm like, man, how does that really work? Do they like put it in? They steep it in with the grapes? Like, do you know?
Yes, they put it in with fermentation. It's wow. Crazy. Well, there's different ways to do it, but
that's really amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing fermentation.
Wow, and it shows up at these parties. I got to come to Healdsburg and go to these parties where there might be a bottle of this.
You do, girl.
It sounds really, really fun.
Everyone thinks we're all hillbillies out there, but we got it going on a little bit.
We got some sophisticated parties.
We got weed
wine. Weed wine. That's the new trend. I think it'll be very, very popular. Places like Colorado are going to be buying that up like crazy.
Yes.
Those guys love to put weed in everything. I don't know when they're going to legalize it in South Carolina. It's like it's maybe never going to happen. It's a very conservative place.
The South, yeah. I could see the South being a little bit late to the take.
Yeah, the Bible Belt's going to be the very last one. I feel like it always starts. Everything good starts in California and then kind of migrates up to the Northeast and then New York and then it trickles down to us dead last.
Although I will say that is not the case with the food and wine scene in Charleston.
True.
Very savvy.
True.
And
yeah.
Right up there with some of the greatest cities, San Francisco, New York, you guys are holding your own.
Yeah, we do. In that way, you're absolutely right. And Charleston is such this kind of like enigma in the state that now you're seeing great restaurants kind of popping up all over the state, which is really, really fun because South Carolina is a very rugged place as well. I think that's why I identified so much with Sonoma. Who are your favorite winemakers in that area? Who are your friends and pals that you think are like some of the coolest that are doing cool stuff too?
Well, Noah and Kelly Dorrance are our very close friends, and they are the owners of Reeve Wine.
I've never had any of Reeve's wine.
Check it out.
Oh, yes.
Especially making some amazing Riesling from the Anderson Valley.
Whoa.
Also, our friends Ryan and Megan Glab own Rhyme.
Yes. I love them. I love their wines so, so much. The His and Hers, when they do the His and Hers, I'm always like, they're doing it right. They like take their own interpretation of how to do their own bottlings. It's so great.
Our friends Kath and Baron Ziegler own Banshee.
Yeah.
Of course, Pax.
Yep.
Formerly Windgap, now Pax.
Yeah.
Unti is great.
Yep.
Love those wines. There's so many great projects going on now.
There really is. And I feel like that's such a special little place. It's got to feel like a cool thing to be a part of. I always equate that to like being in a scene when things are really happening for that scene. You know, most people I think go through their lives being like, oh man, if I had just been here 10 years before, I would have like been at CBGB when there were people there that were cool.
Right.
And
that's kind of the story of my life. I know.
I'm always like a day late and a dollar short when it comes to being like, oh, things used to be like really like coming up. So
except actually you were right on time.
I know. Right on time. And I feel like you guys are there now. You're like really in a cool place, making amazing wines, leading that charge with people who are doing cool things too. So it's a pretty exciting life you have.
Thank you. It is. And we do feel that right now. Like we're kind of in our stride right now. And
definitely.
Yeah. With the tasting room and you know, it's just Matt and I now as co-owners. We just picked up some cool new fruit sources this year. Like everything just feels, you know, when you're just feeling it, like,
yeah,
you're like, it's going.
It's just vibing. Things are lining up. The train is going.
Like, and like it keeps one thing leads to another, you know? And it's been really great.
Are you going to add any new varietals to the portfolio? Do you guys, cause right now you do Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir and Carignan. What am I missing?
On
the rosé.
The rosé is of Carignan.
Okay. Yeah.
We haven't made one since 2014, but there is going to be a 2018 Caleta Syrah.
Ooh.
Which we get from Santa Cruz. Actually, this Saveria Pinot that is right in front of you here.
I'm so excited
in
about
that
this.
Saveria Pinot vineyard, there's randomly two rows of Syrah.
Weird.
It's the coolest vineyard that we work with, so we can't always get the Syrah ripe.
Yeah.
So that's why we haven't made it since 2014. But we are making one, so
yeah. Ooh,
it's very
Chris
Hermitage-y delicious.
Oh my god! And I always say this wrong. Can you confirm how to say Val? Is it Val de Guy?
You know, I've heard both. My husband says Val de Guy. I say Val de Guy.
Yeah.
Depends on your sexual orientation. Just kidding.
I know. Literally, I'm always like, Valde.
But yeah, we always make Valde Gay, which is another very cool heirloom California varietal. Ours was planted in 1942.
Holy shit.
That's coming from the Lelonis Vineyard in Redwood Valley. Same as our Sauvignon Blanc.
Whoa.
Which is why we started making Sauvignon Blanc, because up until then we didn't really care about Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah.
Sauvignon Blanc's very easy to not care about unless it's delicious.
Unless it's from Sancerre.
Yeah. Exactly. Or,
But we were like, oh, 1942, head-trained Sauvignon Blanc. Yes, we're interested.
Whoa.
So yeah, we do a few outliers, you know. Often we save those wines for our direct mailing list clients or wine club, but some of those make their way into our top wholesale markets. Charleston usually gets a few goodies.
Yeah. Charleston is one of the favorites. It gets some fancy stuff from time to time.
Charleston is a favorite child.
the favorite. It's cool because I'm always like, you know, I'd love to see the variation in the vintages, but I'm like, what are they going to do next? Because so many things, like you said, like Riesling, are started popping up, and you're seeing lots of funky, kind of overlooked varietals in America anyway that are being planted or have already existed. Maybe like who knew there was?
Yeah,
yeah.
We're not going to get too crazy. We are a Burgundy house, and we are Chardonnay and Pinot faithful, and we're going to stay the course.
Yeah,
but yeah, we've always made Carignan. We're going to keep doing our Sauvignon Blanc. We're going to keep doing our Val de Gay.
Yeah.
Syrah, whenever we can get the fruit ripe. And then you never know. Some things could pop up.
Put some funky stuff
always
in there.
Always have our eyes open.
Sarah Licklater, it is so nice to have you in the studio, to meet you officially again, and to spend time talking with you and getting to know you. Lioko Wines here in Charleston are easily accessible. You can find them at Graft. You can find them at Monarch. You can find them pretty much at any restaurant that's worth its salt.
Edmunds Exchange.
For sure. That place, isn't that amazing? It's like a cathedral.
Beautiful.
For booze.
Yeah.
It's like a church.
Even if you don't drink, you should go there just to see how beautiful it is.
Just to pray. Because it's seriously, like, it's the most peaceful, like, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it's got all the right stuff. Everything in there is super cool. Mm-hmm. So if you're local, you can find those anywhere. But you can also, are you able to like just sign up and get into the monthly club? It sounds like you'll get special stuff.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
yes, we would love anyone and everyone to buy direct. The website is liokowine.com.
Yep.
And you can order on the website. Yes, you can join the club, you know. We'll work with you on shipping, and you'll get all the newest, coolest stuff, and first crack at Magnums and our Syrah.
Yes,
wines that people don't get.
No, I'm totally doing that because I want all the special stuff.
Yeah, and there's some really affordable levels in the club. You know, one of them is only 3 bottles 4 times a year, so it's a total of 1 case a year. It's not a huge commitment. Just enough to keep it coming and keep it fun, but it still gets you a discount on the wines, so it's the best price on the wines that you can get.
Which, if I'm buying them anyway, every Thanksgiving, it's like, then I would be guaranteed I'll have my vintage, like, set up.
Right, then you don't have to press the panic button when you run out.
Yeah, when I'm like, wait, you're already gone. It's already gone. I got it. What am I going to do? So sign up for their wine club. Check out their wines. I'm so excited about these bottles you brought. It's so, so kind of you.
Yes, my pleasure.
And give my best to the Healdsburg, to Matt, everybody that's out there doing amazing things. Keep doing what you guys are doing. Everybody looks to you to kind of see what's new and cool. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, I will. Thanks, Lindsay. It was a pleasure being here.
My pleasure, Sarah. We'll see you soon. That's our show. That's a wrap, guys. I've given you all the good news I've got. Sarah Licklater, she's great, huh? Love her. Sign up for their wine club. Go to liokowine.com. LIOCOWINE. You know how to spell wine.com. And you can rate us on iTunes. You can do it. It's one of the nicest things you can possibly do for us. For me. For each other. If you want to sponsor the show, you can email us at fmbradio@gmail.com. That's FFIMBRADIO@gmail.com. You can do it. We'll totally do a commercial just for you, whoever you are. and hang in there. We'll see you next week. Bye. Bye-bye.